run the programs for you. So, you know, just, you know, I have a document I want to show you with just our menu of services. Let's see if I can find it. Huh. Here we go. Here we go. So this is the menu of services that we have that, you know, and I can sort of highlight the ones that I think might be most useful to you guys. I know you've probably done one of the programs that's not actually listed here. Sorry, I hate to move those things around while you guys are looking at them. It's hidden in plain sight. Has anybody had the been able to visit one of those? Did you guys hold that?
Yeah, we do it typically in January or February.
And do you find that people attend and people are very, you know, interested?
The one that we did in 2020 was at, or 2021 was at Chatham High School. So they did it as like one of their consortium events. And then this past year in December, it was virtual. So with the DEA, but we had 40 something people.
Oh, that's great attendance. So, that's good.
I think it's one of the biggest draws that we have gotten, actually. People are very interested in that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, none of us are born knowing, you know, what to look for. So I think it's really a great educational tool. So I'm glad you guys are doing that. And then some of the other programs that I think you guys might be interested in would be the 7 Habits for Highly Effective Teens. That is a 6-session program, and it's directed at your age, the age group that you're tasked with. And I think that, you know, that's the kind of program that parents would want their children to attend, so they would encourage them to participate. And that would be something that we could do for you over the summer. You know, if you think that you would be able to get enough people to engage with that. And then we have Boys Council and Cannabis 101. These are all directed toward middle school and high school, and Escape the Vape. And I'm gonna send all of these in a link for you guys so you have it, just so you know. And then Girls Circle. So, you know, these are things that the kids can participate in and really interact with our trained educators, and they come in and they're very adept at relating to the kids and giving them information in ways that, you know, they can really relate to. So, you know, that would be something that we could do. And, you know, for the middle school ages, because you guys are tasked with 12 to 17, is that correct? Yeah. So the life skills would be appropriate for middle school. Those are usually done during the school year. Those are things that, you know, we participate with the school districts on, and then We're Not Buying It would also be for middle school. So that's a program that focuses on, you know, reducing the use of marijuana, alcohol, and e-cigarettes. How do you guys feel about e-cigarettes? Do you feel like you guys are making any headway with parents and kids in that arena? Or
In the key informant interviews that we've done in the past few months, and then also a listening session with youth, we've heard that it's started, you know, it's declined coming off of 2019, 2020, that peak, but slowly starting to creep back up. A lot of the kids that received a lot of the education in 2020 in particular, or late 2019, have all aged out of high school. So now you have the younger kids that have missed some of that education and are, there's a gap there. So trying to target towards that current 8th, 9th grade population would probably be the most beneficial.
Okay. And do you find it easy or difficult to get into the school district's schedule, or?
It's a mix. I mean, I think there are, our relationship, we're very lucky with our relationship with the schools, especially when it comes to our student survey. And we have great student assistance counselors that are very engaged, and you know, the work that they're doing is, you know, they're just responsible for so much in terms of the counseling that they provide, but also the prevention aspect of things. So a lot of times we defer, obviously, to you know, to what they want us to do, and you know, identifying, helping to identify those needs, but we're ready to offer, you know.
Well, and you know, any way that we can help with that, you know, we want to be there to support you guys, because we really are a resource for you, whatever materials you need, that sort of thing. And then I know you guys are particularly interested in opioids and ACEs. So I thought we could just talk a little bit about what's going on with those. Barbara Kaufman is a member of the ACEs task force. Is anybody else here on that task force or? Okay. They usually meet the third Wednesday of the month, and I can send you information if you guys are interested in participating in that. There's a lot of good things happening there. So, you know, before there was a lot of attention paid to adverse childhood experiences, you know, the things that we most likely connected to trauma would be domestic violence, physical or sexual abuse, that sort of thing. But, you know, as the community has studied trauma and what constitutes trauma, it's expanded to include things like divorce, the death of a loved one, substance use disorder in the household, the food insecurity, poverty, all of those things are ACEs. And so what Prevention is Key has done is they've connected with the Center for Great Expectations. And we've been offering webinars on the trauma attunement. Has anyone had a chance to attend any of those? Roselle, you're nodding.
No, I haven't attended those particular webinars, but I've been heavily involved over the years with other programs that are trauma-based. And I really appreciate the fact that you've expanded it, because particularly during COVID, I think that we found a lot of trauma in young people as their lives were totally disrupted.
Yeah, and that was a trauma, really, not being able to see their friends, you know, worrying about loved ones, especially loved ones who are in nursing homes and that sort of thing. People lost a lot of loved ones. And so, and death of a loved one is definitely a trauma. So we actually are running a series right now on trauma attunement. It's called Building a Toolkit for Recovery. And I'm going to send you guys the link to registration. Then the next one is tomorrow. And it runs from around 10 to about 11:30. And it's the speaker comes from the Center for Great Expectations.
Actually had Ellen Pertell. When did we have Ellen speak?
December meeting.
Yeah, who runs the Institute there. Yeah. I actually worked at the Center for Great Expectations.
You did. They're wonderful.
They are.
They really are. Their webinars on trauma attunement have been really effective and educational. So, and we usually get in attendance anywhere from 50 to 100 people on the Zooms. And I can send you the most recent one was last week. And I can send you the link to the recording for that if you guys would like to watch that. And if you want to register for the next two, there's no charge for it. Please, you guys are welcome to join. And I think that, you know, the connection between trauma in childhood and addiction is a really strong one. I mean, and there's so many things at play with addiction, trauma being one of the most significant ones, genetics, obviously, and just exposure to, you know, whatever's out there. So, and I understand your concern, right? Because what's happening now in this age group is And what we can do to interrupt any of the negative, you know, the negative messages that they're getting, or the access that they get, you know, educating families not to leave medications where people can get to them, right? I know we all think about that. You know, in particular, when they're visiting elderly family members, to make sure that, you know, there's no access to anything in the medicine cabinet, which can be hard to do, but making them aware that, you know, that sort of thing needs to be attended to, right? Because we've all had that situation where someone in the family is going through chemo or in some end stage kind of situation, and the medications are everywhere. So just raising awareness to family members that those things need to be put out of sight and secured when kids are going to be there, because they all know what's out there. And you know, what we were finding was, you know, a kid would come to school with a cast on their arm or their leg in a cast, and people would ask them, oh, what did they give you for that? You know, and that's sort of how it all gets started. So, so, you know, everything that we've been doing in terms of raising awareness in the medical community, not to overprescribe, you know, letting family members, you know, educating family members that, you know, access has to be very carefully monitored, that sort of thing, has made a big difference. Our Knockout Opioid Abuse Day initiative has been really successful. So all of those things, I think, and the more we can get, you know, communities and organizations like you guys involved in those initiatives to get the word out is, you know, is really what's going to move things forward. Christine? Oh, no. Rosella?
I think also that there's a national narrative that pain is something to be feared and avoided, and that pain is a normal aspect of life. Overwhelming pain has to be handled and controlled. But I think that this idea that we should be afraid of suffering any kind of pain really sets the stage for a lot of addictive, you know, the beginning steps of addiction.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, and fear, I think, is at play in a lot of the issues that we're sort of dealing with, you know, this, and the hyper we're hypersensitive to, you know, all of these things. And it's partly because it's what the messages that we're getting from the media.
Yeah.
Right. So, but knowledge is the one thing that I think is the cure for that. The more people know, the less fearful they are, the more in control they feel they are. So, so it's really important that we all get our messages out there. What other questions do you guys have for me and for Prevention is Key? I'll answer them to the best of my ability, and anything I can't answer, I can get information for you. Sir.
Terry, can you talk a little bit about CARES and
yes,
the recovery?
Yeah. That's where I started volunteering there almost 3 years ago. And so that's our recovery side. That's where we offer services to people who are in active addiction and seeking treatment or other pathways to recovery. We are a multiple pathways approach to recovery. So what we do is we have a conversation with the person who is seeking services to find out what it is they want. What we find is that they've had a lot of people telling them what they should do. No one's really been asking them what they want to do. And that's the one of the key differences in how we go about helping people is, you know, we sit with them, what happened to you? How did you get where you are? How do you want to address it? That sort of thing. And we have a lot of initiatives going. One is the opioid overdose prevention program. So we're out in the communities on Hope One in Morris and Passaic counties, teaching people how to use Narcan, giving them free Narcan, giving them some harm reduction. Another approach that we really advocate for is harm reduction. So, you know, we're not going to stop people from using. People are going to use if they want to use, if they're not in that place where they're ready to recover. So let's make them as safe as we can until they're ready. And so what that does is that puts us in contact with this very vulnerable population. We give them, means to stay safe if they're going to use. The only thing we can't give them is clean needles. We can give them, alcohol wipes and fentanyl testing strips. And, it depends on the county. Some counties don't let us distribute those, but the ones that do, that's what we give them. And what that breeds in them is just sort of this, these are people that we can trust. So, and eventually they do come in and they do ask for services. So, we're out in the community almost every day on Hope One, either in Passaic or Morris, distributing those packets. We do a stuff the bus every Christmas, right before Christmas. So we stuff our van with donated clothing items and, personal hygiene stuff. And we just take it into the communities and distribute it to anybody that needs it. So that kind of outreach is really important. And then we also have family support. So if someone comes to you and says, I don't know what to do. I think my son is using or my daughter's using. I don't know where to go. And I will tell you, having navigated that whole section on the internet myself multiple times, it's overwhelming to me. So having a parent who, is faced with, a family member who is really struggling, having to wade through all that information to try to find something useful can be really hard. So, send them to us. We can help them figure out what they need. And one of the programs that we offer is CRAFT. It's the Community Reinforcement and Family Training. And I'm the coordinator for that. So that is a program where if you live in Morris or Passaic counties, we can work one-on-one with this person, with that family. It's usually 12 to 15 sessions once a week. And we work on things like communication, positive communication, self-care, understanding and enabling versus helping, letting natural consequences unfold as long as there isn't a risk, a risk for serious harm or death. It's really a way to help families stay engaged with their loved one in healthy ways. Because the messages out there are, you have to kick them out, you have to not engage with them, you detach with love or all of those things. And really what that's about is these people don't have the tools that they need to stay engaged in healthy ways. So that's what we try to give them. It is an evidence-based program. It's been clinically tried numerous times with success. And that's another resource for you guys. We don't charge for that either. So anybody can come to our meetings. They're Thursday nights at 6:00, and I can send you the link to that if you want. And then if they decide they want to do the one-on-one sessions, we pair them with a family peer that has been trained by Dr. Bob Myers, and get them started. It's a great program. It's my favorite, one of my favorite things to do. So, and another program that we have that I think is how people initially get connected to us for recovery services. They'll go to detox and the hospital will give them our packet of information. And in there is a registration form for telephone recovery support. That may be the only thing that they do with us for a while, but they get a phone call from us every week or several times a week if they decide that's what they want, just to check in and say, how's your recovery going? How can we help you? What kind of recovery services do you need today? And, and sometimes it's just, that it's the only phone call they get all day and it's a friendly voice. So I can't tell you how many times I start with just leaving messages and end up with someone who comes into CARES who is now training to be a certified peer recovery specialist. It's a great initial way to connect with us. I'm trying to think. And then we have the peer support services. So people can come in to the center and work with a peer on things like goal setting and, you know, how they want to structure their own recovery, whether it's, do they want to go to detox and outpatient, or do they want to go to an inpatient program? What kind of insurance do they have? These are the places that take Medicaid, that sort of thing. They don't have Medicaid, we connect them with the agency that can help them apply and get Medicaid so that then they can, you know, they can move forward. So we just try to be a recovery community for people, because what we know about addiction is that the cure for the cure for addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. So keeping people connected is sort of our mission, you know. And I think, you know, it's an agency that's very dear to me. Rosella?
Do most private insurances cover your services?
Our services are free. We don't charge anything for our recovery services. On the prevention side, some of those programs are fee for service, but on the recovery side, we don't charge. Everything that we offer is free to people in the community. And the private insurance, there are certain facilities that will take Medicaid in the area. Some of them are actually really very good. But what Medicaid will pay for is limited. So then having that agency to sort of fill in those gaps, having CARES and peer recovery sort of help people transition from one aspect of their recovery to the next, whether they're going from detox to treatment to sober living into the, you know, to the general community. We can be there to help them transition. And so, and that's what our peers do. And they all have a shared experience with addiction. And what that communicates to the people that they're serving is, I've been where you are. I know what you're going through. If I can do it, and you can do it, and I'm here to help. So it's pretty effective.
Perry, can I ask if you have any programs that are related to medication-assisted treatment, if you have any good alliances with, and what is your general experience about availability for
it's getting better. More facilities are willing to work with people on medication assisted mm-hmm. treatment. So I think that has a lot to do with all the advocacy that's been happening over the last several years, being out in the community and explaining to people why it's okay to give people clean needles. That doesn't encourage them to use, they're going to use. Let's make them safe until they can find, you know, what they need to find within themselves to come in and get help. So I think that all of the stuff that we're doing out in the community on Hope One has been part of that. And Morris County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Gannon, he's amazing. Honestly, the program that he's put together there and inspired other counties in New Jersey to adopt has been transformational for the whole state. And there are other states that looked, you know, that they're mentoring to help put in programs like that. So, we embrace multiple pathways. Medicated assisted treatment is a pathway. And if you think about it, you have someone whose life is in chaos and they're using to forget about that chaos for a little while. If you take the substance away and they have all this chaos in their life, what are the chances that they're not, you know, that they're going to be able to maintain, mm-hmm. you know, it can happen, but it's a very tough road. So if you put them on something like Suboxone or methadone while they get all of their other affairs in order, as long as they do that, then, you know, then weaning them off of that at some point when they're in a better place, emotionally, financially, you know, relationship wise, all of those things, they have a better chance of maintaining their sobriety. We also, we collaborate with, I don't know if you guys know, there's a professor at Ramapo College that we've been working with. She's done a lot of work studying different models internationally and how different countries address addiction. And one of them is Portugal. And so she's been working with us to help advocate for change in our legislative system, you know, how we look at addiction. And one of the things that we do, which I love, is when the sheriff's or the prosecutor department, prosecutor's offices know that they're going to have an operation where they are going into communities where they know there's a lot of drug use and making arrests, they bring us, they bring a peer, and they offer the people being arrested, say, look, you know, we're going to arrest you because this is illegal, but we're going to, you have the option of talking to these peers who can help you connect to treatment services and get you, you know, to a place where, you know, this isn't, you know, going to keep happening to you.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you know, and my experience too has been that the even with treatment, even with a period of MAT, you know, it's very difficult to maintain that sobriety and, you know, that even abstinence without full support of, you know, the things that you're talking about right now, follow-up, connection, things that people talk about. I know at Center for Great Expectations, they talk about trauma being the absence of the good, not just abuse and the things that we would traditionally consider to be trauma. And, you know, identifying that in their own lives. And we've talked about this several times in various formats, you know, in our committee meetings, talking about ACEs. We're going to, you know, address that again, ACEs and PACEs, and, you know, people being able to identify that in their own communities and in themselves, really. So this is also what the work you're doing is amazing. And I think that, you know, even listening to the breadth of it and how you're taking such, you know, it seems like every time you see a point that's not being met, you guys find a way to actually meet that. And that's what needs to happen.
And I gotta tell you, Barbara Kaufman is amazing. Her ability to look at something and just take it on and find, you know, put together a program that, you know, really helps to, you know, address the situation is amazing. You know, she's been doing this since the 1980s. And
she worked with ORP, right? Like years ago, right? Wasn't she involved in the...
She did ORP. I'm not sure she may have been instrumental in getting it started, but she's really just prevention now. Okay. And so, and does everybody know what ORP is? That's the opioid overdose recovery programs. So we get funding from the state and the county to be on call 24 hours a day, so that if someone is rescued with Narcan, they will call us and we will deploy a peer to the hospital that the patient is being taken to, just to offer them services. And it's interesting because since they started doing that, the success rate of getting someone to at least agree to go to detox went from about zero in that situation to about 50%. So that's a big increase in, you know, helping people get to services. And then we follow up with them over a period of time. So it's not like we just get them into detox. We, you know, we call them, there's actually a structure how many times we call them a month, the first month, the second month, you know, and we just keep them sort of in our pipeline so that we always know, you know, where they are and what they're going to need next. So, and not everybody's successful, you know, sometimes we go and they won't talk to us. Sometimes they'll talk to us, but they won't answer our calls after that. You know, we don't have any control over that, but, you know, eventually, you know, we just keep working at it. And you tend to see people multiple times, sometimes multiple times in the same weekend. So, sort of the nature of the beast, but So do you guys have any questions about anything that we talked about or anything that we didn't talk about? Rosella?
Oh, sorry, I'm a question box. The idea of stigma-free is just words unless there's some sort of action behind it. And I know that it's been a big part of the Hope One outreach. Do you see any success in that whole campaign and that philosophy of us moving away from this penalization of drug use to treatment of people in need?
Yes, I do see it. I see it in the collaboration that we have with law enforcement. Law enforcement officers, many of them have done a complete 180 in how they look at addiction. Yes. Because they've been working with peers. And then there's also we run seminars on destigmatized language. So much, it starts with the words we use. So we don't say addict, we don't say clean, we don't say dirty. We don't call people by their disease. It's just not what, you know. Yes. We use person-centered language, and we always use that. And, you know, while we don't necessarily call anybody out for using other types of language, we really try to set an example. And sometimes if we feel like it'll be well received, we'll say, you know, hey, you know, we're really not using those terms anymore. We explain to them why, you know, basically what, you know, we just said. But, you know, what we know is that stigma really comes from a place of fear. You know, people try to put as much distance between themselves and what scares them. And they do that by making it other. Well, that couldn't happen to me, kind of thing. And they look for ways that, you know, that person is different from me because that's where they feel safer. So, and like I said, I think the antidote for that, for fear, is education. So the more we're out in the community talking to people about stuff like that. I'm just reading Laurie's comment.
Yeah.
He is definitely a favorite of everybody at CARES. You know, and it is, we're beginning to ask why. You know, before when a kid would, you know, act out in school, it was a disciplinary thing. And the more the teachers and educators are trained in trauma, the more likely they are to look at that behavior and say, why is this happening? And understand that, you know, maybe it's something that they're doing unintentionally that's triggering this child. Or maybe having them sit next to this one child that for whatever reason is triggering them, you know, understanding that, you know, behavior has a source, you know, and trying to get to the bottom of what that source is. So I love what they're doing with ACEs and with stigma reduction and all of that. And you're right, they are just words unless you put stuff behind it. So thank you for saying that. It's true. So that's about all I have for today. If you guys have any questions now, I'm here. I'll stay for the rest of the meeting, but you can always reach out to me. I'm going to put my email address in the chat so y'all have it. Let me make sure I spell my name right.
Thanks so much, Terry. And I just want to say too, with particularly what Terry has talked about with CARES. You know, when this was a couple of years ago now, we met with the faith sector, the Madison Interfaith Council. And there was somebody at that meeting that was in recovery. And he talked about how, you know, although the coalition is, we're primary prevention, so we don't really focus on harm reduction or things like that. But he really talked about the importance of engaging the recovery community in the work that we're doing. And it's so important. And it's something that, you know, I think we're going to try to be mindful of as we move forward. It's just so important, I think, especially for perspective and for a lot of reasons. But I think there's a lot that MCC can do to engage the recovery community and also to make sure that our community members are aware of these amazing services that are available to them. So I think that that's definitely going to be something that we can really focus on in the coming months and years. So.
And if you would like to have someone from in the recovery community come and talk to you guys, I can probably help you connect with someone that can do that.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take that back with me and I'll get somebody, you know, to connect with you.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for letting me come and, you know, reach out to me anytime if you have any questions. I'm happy to, you know, connect you to the right people or answer the questions if I can. That's, you know, that's my job. So
thanks.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Terry.
I'm just going to mute myself right now so I can.
All right.
Do you mind if I stay for the rest of the meeting?
Yeah, please do.
Please stay. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Terry. That was, it was so, it's so amazing. I actually am having trouble wrapping my brain around all of the roles that you have. but I think what it really comes down to is how connected it all is, and that we have to learn about, you know, all of the stages. I worked with women, adult women in at CGE, and, you know, thinking about, if I could only have reached you in your teens, or, you know, we can really jump in anywhere in the cycle. And the more we educate about ACEs, the more parents can tune into themselves so that they're not inadvertently passing on the cycle of trauma where it keeps going. And, you know, somebody who is actually seeking treatment is such a courageous cycle breaker. You know, and if we look at it that way, that this isn't something that just, you know, originated necessarily, it's really probably a long line of different people adapting the best they can.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. So thank you. Thank you so much for your, all your work and your presentation today.
Well, thank you for that.
So next, Allison, do you want to do some updates?
Sure. I'll just run through a couple of brief updates and then we'll move into sector updates. So a lot of stuff going on. We're kind of coming out of a little bit of a quieter time. So our competing continuation application was successfully submitted last week. So that's good. It sort of allows us to focus on a lot of really good stuff as we move into the spring and summer. Lots of really good initiatives, projects, events, tablings, things like that coming up. And we're excited about all of it. So coming up this Thursday, we're working with Pat Awesome from Partnership to End Addiction, who's going to be doing a webinar for us called Driving Through the Fog. So it focuses on the impact of marijuana specifically on driving, but that's not all that the presentation is. She's gonna be talking about signs of impairment, how to test for marijuana use, the impact of alcohol and marijuana when used simultaneously, specifically New Jersey laws. She'll talk about teens. So it's going to be a comprehensive presentation. We'll be sending out an email about that again later today with the registration link. We also have on May 2nd at 7 p.m., myself and Christine McIntyre from Project Community Pride are going to be speaking. We're going to be doing a webinar for the First Presbyterian Church of New Vernon. I'll be talking about drug trends. Current and emerging drug trends. Christine will be talking about mental health, anxiety, stress, all of these things specific to teens. And then together we'll be talking about starting conversations with your teens about these important topics. So we're excited about this. This is a new partnership for MCC with the First Presbyterian Church of New Vernon. The Reverend is a member of the Y, and she had reached out looking for some more information. And she, a lot of you probably know this, Harding Elementary School, those kids eventually go to Madison High School if they go to public school. So that's a really important population for us to connect to, the parent population, the teen population as well. And a lot of what First Presbyterian Church does, a lot of their congregants are, their kids go to that school. So it's important for us faith-based, but also just to have that parent and team connection as well. So we're excited about that. What else? We have Chatham High School Project Graduation is coming up. We, MCC, has worked with the PTO, Chatham High School PTO, Christina McRae, for the past, this I think our third year working with them. So we will be providing the drawstring bags that we've done in the past. Project Community Pride and MCC are stuffing the bags full of important resources. MCC does binge drinking, alcohol poisoning resources. I think we put our substance abuse directory resource card in there as well. And then Christine is going to be putting in mental health specific resources as well for those kids. So we're very excited about that. We have, we're also, our teen task force is working on a new project. They are working with the PTO as well in Chatham. We're doing something for prom graduation June period of time, where we are working with the florists and tuxedo rental places in Madison and Chatham on a prevention initiative. Our kids, one of our teen task force members in particular, made a really good point that I want to share with all of you. When we were talking about the florists and the tuxedo rental places, we had initially been talking about creating resources specific to teens. When they go into these shops, pick up their tuxedos or their corsages or boutonnieres, to hit teens that way. One of the kids made a really good point that a lot of times it's parents that are going into those shops and picking things up for their kids while their kids are getting ready. So we want to make sure that it's a two-pronged approach. We want to hit parents and teens, especially for parents, social hosting information and things like that. So those are, this is all sort of in the preliminary stage. We'll be talking more with the PTO in the next week about how to develop the idea a little bit further, but the teen task force is, this is kind of what their project is right now. We also, you know, this will, June is the period of time. June, July is when we do sticker shock. We also are excited to bring the Draw the Line campaign that we talked about a couple of months ago, bring it to life as well. And so we're going to be talking about that a little bit later when we go, when we talk about our work groups. We have, let's see what else. We have the, our next MCC meeting is scheduled for May 17th. We have a speaker. So I think it was our two meetings ago, we had Candace Wu speak from Atlantic Health, and we talked about our new partnership that we're that we've created with Atlantic Health. One of the things that we're working on is to really try to offer meaningful presentations for members, educational presentations. So we are set for a presentation on May 17th, the same day as our next coalition meeting. We're going to be having Conrad Annie, who is a crisis clinician with Atlantic Health. So what he does is he works in the emergency department at Overlook, Morristown Medical Center, and Chilton. And he basically triages patients that come in with substance use disorder or are in mental health crisis. So he basically triages those patients and gets them to where they need to be. So he is going to be speaking on May 17th. So what I was thinking about doing is potentially moving our coalition meeting. He's going to be speaking at 6:30. So potentially moving our coalition meeting to the evening instead, and just sort of making the first little bit of the time, our coalition meeting, and then just having people stay and hearing Conrad speak. He's going to be speaking specifically about teens and what he's seeing. So I think it's going to be a really interesting presentation, and we're looking forward to that. So I'll share more information about that. Maybe I'll do a poll in our newsletter this week and sort of see what people's availability might be for April 17th May 17th, and see if we can just sort of put it all together and do it that way instead. I see we have Detective Anderson and we have Brian Colatrella on here as well. April 30th, I think it's the 30th, right guys, is Prescription Take Back Day. So Chatham Township and Chatham Borough Police Departments will be at CVS in the township and the borough collecting medication from residents. And MCC will also be providing doTERRA packets and then also information about the safe disposal locations throughout the county. And we'll be giving those bags away to anybody that's dropping their medications off as well to sort of serve in the interim between national prescription take back days. So looking forward to that as well. I think for right now, that's all that I have. Yep, and Brian wrote, I'm sorry, I didn't say, so Operation Take Back, Chatham Borough Police will be at the Chatham Borough CVS on Main Street, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then Chatham Township at Hickory Tree CVS from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And in the past, law enforcement has collected quite a bit of medication. I'm thinking about 2 years ago when I went to the borough CVS with Brian, collected over 70 pounds of medication. So that was a really successful take back. So any questions or anything about what I've shared before we move into, Rosella. Oh, you're muted.
Yep. Sorry. Two thoughts. And one of them is that in Chatham Borough, we're having a mini sustainability fair on the 23rd. And it would be really nice to have some flyers about the prescription take back the following week to share. Is there any way for me to get a copy of a flyer that we could put at our at the Environmental Commission table to hand out?
Yeah.
And because I think that certainly fits in with the Environmental Commission and our outreach as well. And the other thought that I had, when we're putting together these information packets, you know, our mission is prevention, but I think also a part of our mission has to be, I just was listening to so much about what Terry just shared, that we also have to recognize that there are people who, you know, prevention isn't the place where they are right now, that they're already involved in dangerous behaviors. And so I think that the information that we give out about treatment is it's also important for us to give information out about treatment as well as prevention when we're putting together these packets, particularly those backpacks that you're providing for. So I would think it'd be really great to put information about CARES and other organizations like that into those backpacks as well. Thank you.
I can drop off some of the packets that we give out on Hope One, and we give out to the police departments that in the county, they give those to people who have been rescued with Narcan. So they have a lot of our information in there, and you know, I can put my card in there. Also, if you guys would like us to come and, you know, set up a table at an event, we can do that too. You just let me know and I'll come and bring materials.
Great, thanks, Terry. All right, that's all that I have.
All right, so I think we'll move on to the sector updates. And I believe that John Hoover has something that he, if he wouldn't mind starting. John, would you mind giving us an update on what's going on with the government sector? Madison?
Not at all. My pleasure. Back on February 21st, 2021, our governor signed legislation permitting the distribution of cannabis. Each municipality was given the option of opting in or opting out of recreational cannabis. We in Madison had opted out of recreational cannabis, but we did not address prescription medical marijuana. So we have gotten an inquiry about medical marijuana and subsequently drafted up an ordinance related to that. Excuse me, sorry. So the way the process works is that the council drafts up the ordinance. It then goes to the planning department, planning commission. They look at it and bounce it back to the council. Okay. In this case, we drafted up the ordinance and they bounced it back to us and declined to approve it. And the reason why they declined to approve it was because it included all four districts. So the only change that we've made and resubmitted it to the planning board is that it deletes CBD 1 and CBD 2 as eligible zones for medical marijuana distribution. Let me read you some of the requirements for medical marijuana distribution, the medical cannabis dispensary. No more than two medical cannabis dispensaries shall be permitted in the CCC, community commercial zone, and the gateway zone. Number two, medical cannabis dispensary shall not be located within 750 feet of the pre-existing primary or secondary schools or other medical cannabis dispensaries. The distance shall be measured from property line to property line. Number three, for purposes of determining required parking, dispensaries shall be classified as retail uses not separately listed pursuant to section 195-35A. Number four, drive-throughs shall be permitted at medical cannabis dispensaries. Number five, no medical cannabis or cannabis paraphernalia shall be displayed or kept at medical cannabis dispensaries so as to be visible from outside the premises or for the public right of way. No medical cannabis or cannabis paraphernalia shall be stored outside. Number six, no medical cannabis or cannabis-infused products shall be smoked, eaten, or otherwise consumed or ingested on the property of any medical cannabis dispensary. Number seven, a medical cannabis dispensary shall not be located in a home, apartment, or condominium. Number eight, a medical cannabis dispensary shall be required to have an outdoor waiting area of at least 200 square feet. Number nine, the hours of operation of such medical cannabis dispensaries shall be between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. from Monday through Saturday and from 9 to 5 on Sundays and holidays. Number 10, signs. All signage shall be compliant with state law and all applicable signage requirements in the borough code. A medical cannabis dispensary shall not display on the exterior of the establishment any advertisement for cannabis or a certain brand of cannabis product, except that a medical cannabis dispensary may have external signage for purpose of identifying the building by the license name pursuant to state law. Signs shall not contain any visible depictions of any part of the cannabis plant. A medical cannabis dispensary may not advertise in a manner that would target or is designed to appeal to individuals under the legal age to purchase cannabis products, which is 21. Permitting, number 11, permitting. A medical cannabis dispensary shall be subject to permitting, including but not limited to occupancy and building permits and licensing requirements. Requests for a license shall be submitted via application to the borough council, herein dispensary application as required by chapter 193 of the borough code. The annual fee for medical cannabis dispensary is $40,000, renewed annually, except that if they're 20% of the full-time employees are filled by residents of the borough, the medical cannabis dispensary shall receive a $5,000 discount on the license annual license fee. Okay, and there are some other requirements as well. And that's basically it. It has been submitted to the planning board, and if they approve it or not, it's going to come back to the council for discussion on at the next meeting on the 27th of the month.
John, do you know if there's interest? If there are, if
one person, as far as we know, one person has indicated an interest in an opening a dispensary. Yes. We don't know. I don't know who that is. And I don't know the extent to which it has gone through the process because we haven't approved it yet.
Right.
So.
John, I'm sorry, I might've missed it. Is there a limit to the number or is one person, did you speak to that? I didn't catch it.
There were only two. You can only have two medical cannabis dispensaries.
Okay.
CC zone. By the way, Terry, it's good seeing you again and listening to you. Anyhow, anything
Thanks,
else?
John. It's good to see you too.
Yeah. Film at 11.
Yeah, I feel like there's like another separate whole discussion. Maybe Allison, we can talk about like bringing this back around, you know, into like a topic for part of maybe the next meeting or something. Kathy, we could talk about it. Yeah.
I mean, we obviously this is timely. April 21st, you know, you can legally purchase cannabis products in New Jersey. But from what we know, the majority, you know, the sites that are opening or that are going to be dispensing recreational are already approved ATC or alternative treatment centers. So they're already dispensing medical marijuana, and now they're just expanding to offer recreational as well, which, you know, this isn't a political conversation, but it, you know, one of the main purposes behind, you know, the law being passed in New Jersey was for small businesses to be able to operate and open. These ATCs are multi-state organizations, so they have businesses, you know, across multiple states. So I think that's something that's going to be addressed. And I think what John is saying in particular, we don't know anything about the application, but you're looking at a smaller town and where these ATCs, the six medical marijuana dispensaries that are opening to all adults on April 21st are in towns like Maplewood, Bloomfield, Patterson. So a diverse mix of communities. So it's, you know, obviously this is something that's very timely and important, and it's something that we're going to continue to discuss at coalition meetings going forward. But just in hearing what John shared about the different stipulations, you know, the signage is important, the location with proximity to schools, not displaying, you know, cannabis leaf or anything like that. Those are all, you know, just in the sessions that I've been part of with CADCA and CDC trainings, those are things that we're trained to advocate for, so or against. So that sounds really good just off the bat. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, at the next meeting and going forward. Terry.
So I just wanted to speak to the, you know, in terms of harm reduction, what they're finding, and you guys probably are aware of this, that cannabis has been laced with other things when it's, you know, purchased on the street, and people don't know necessarily whether or not what they're getting from their supplier is free of fentanyl or some other drug. So devil's advocate, having a place where, you know, that sort of thing is controlled, you know, as much as, you know, it is something to consider, I guess, when you're making decisions for the town. If people are going to use, and we know they are, we'd rather they use so safely. And that's one way to do it, to offer them a source where, you know, the supply is monitored and protected. So just something to think about.
And we've also talked about before, I mean, New Jersey has one of, if not the strictest medical marijuana programs in the country. So the fact that these ATCs are already have been up and running for several years, and these are the sites that have now opened to recreational sales, that's, you know, that's a good thing, you know, in regard to the fact that they have they have policies in place that have that meet very high standards. I think that that's something to consider as well. So like I said, this will be something that we continue to discuss. And by our next meeting, we'll have more information specific to Madison, the borough, and seeing what changes have come up since then. So thanks again, John. We appreciate that.
Sure.
Anybody else have an update from their sector?
Hi, everybody. I have Project Community Pride, as Allison had shared, with this coalition, we're starting to really do lots of events and projects, and we're really excited to be more involved with MCC, with the substance prevention education, and with our mental health awareness education. So it's really been a great match. I think just to highlight some of the things, just to reiterate some of the things Allison had mentioned, was Night of Conversation. We're going to be working with the backpacks as well, the virtual webinar with Harding. Madison High School Community Service Day, we're going to be doing some work in the teen center, and we've asked your coalition to help as well with the students. We're getting some students for that day. Also, there's the 5K that's coming up, the Mind Matters 5K, which is going to be May 15th on Sunday, and that's going to be benefiting MCC as well as our program, and it's going to be held right here at the Y, so we'd like to get the word out about that. And then just in general, just going forward, being more involved, our program with MCC, it's been great. We recently relocated back to the Y offices, and I think we've had opportunities to connect with your coalition a lot more now, because we're kind of in the same building and all of that. So I think that's my update.
Thanks, Christine. I just real quick, Mind Matters 5K. I totally forgot to mention it, so thank you for bringing it up. A lot of you probably remember the 5K has been going on for decades, right, Christine? Initially, Pfizer was the main sponsor, and then the Y got involved 5 years ago. And it's just such a great event. It's really fun this year. So it had been over at Giralda Farms for, I think, the lifespan of the 5K. And then this year, it's actually coming to the Y. So it's going, the course is going to start and finish here at the Y out in the back. So it's a new course in Madison. Not too hilly. It's a fun residential course, and it's just such a great cause to benefit, a great race to benefit, mental health, those programs for the Y. So Christine and I will have a table, informational table at that event, and it's a family event. It's really fun. Sunday used to be in the evenings on, I think it was on a Wednesday night. It really was sort of catered more towards the corporate set. And this year it's a little bit more family based. So information is on the Y website. I've also been including it in the newsletter. So if you're interested, it's a really fun event. So please consider coming out for it. Any other sectors that want to share about any updates or anything that you have going on?
Anything, any related announcements? One thing I'd just like to say is that, Allison mentioned the one that's the soonest is the webinar or the talk with Pat Awesome about marijuana and driving on Thursday. So that information came out through the, you see it in your emails. If you could personally share it with local people and just say, hey, just a reminder, because, people will tend to look at that. Oh, I'd love to go to that. Maybe they don't write it down. They don't know when it is, but just to really share, some of our events to say, to just some people that you know personally and just say, hey, MCC is sponsoring this event. You know, you might be interested. It's in a couple of days, so they don't have too long to, you know, have it sit on their calendar. It's, I think it's a little bit more effective in, you know, getting the word out to further one of the pieces of our mission, which is education. So if you could, if you guys could think about that, that would be great.
Also, Prevention is Key and CARES is having their fundraiser on Wednesday, May 25th. It's the Wednesday before Memorial Day. If anybody would like to attend, there's a 50-50 and a tricky tray, and there'll be speakers there. We always have, you know, a story of hope from someone who's, you know, found recovery through CARES and that sort of thing. And, you know, there'll be a lot of different people from different parts of the community, you know, the community, law enforcement, and, you know, recovery. So anybody would like to come, there's a link to the registration on our website, Prevention
is that live, Terry? Is that alive?
Well, it is for now. I hope so, because I've been putting a lot of work into getting it set up. So I'm hoping that, you know, things will, you know, it is outside. It's held at the Windlass on Lake Hopatcong. And so most of the festivities are outside. So as long as things don't go, you know, full scale disaster, we'll try to have it there. We did have it in person last year. So I'm hoping that, you know, with the vaccines and the effective treatments, we'll be able to hold it again. It is a lot of fun. So I'll send a link for that too, in case you guys are interested, just to make it easy.
Anyone else have any updates, thoughts? All right.
We can, well, let's move into the last little bit of our meeting. We have been talking at our last meeting last month. We talked about sort of changing the structure of our meeting a little bit as we move, not changing the structure, that sounds more intense. We're going to incorporate work groups again. So for those of you that have been involved in the coalition for several years, or even a few several years, we used to have work groups, subcommittee. We called them subcommittees at that point in time. And we had a variety of subcommittees based on meeting different goals or action, you know, as part of our action plan. As we transition to a lot more, you know, as you heard from our updates, we have a lot of stuff going on. The summer, spring, summer, we're going to have even more going on. And we want to be able to accomplish as much as we can in our action plan, and then also outside of our action plan. And so we want to bring these work groups back. We talked at our last meeting about what we think our work groups should or could focus on. And then we also discussed that at our board meeting last week. And what we're thinking for our work groups are, we want to focus on recruitment. We want to focus on sustainability, and then we want to focus on our initiatives and just project planning. So with work groups, and I, you know, as I was writing the project narrative, you know, it really occurred to me that there is, you know, obviously there's a value in using work groups and having people have very specific responsibilities within that work group. So, you know, those are the groups that we're, you know, we think that we've identified those groups as the most important, you know, when we, in the way that we're organizing them. We need to recruit more, we always need to recruit more people. We're in a position right now, MCC, where we have a lot of people that are coalition members. We don't have a lot of people that come right now that are coming to coalition meetings, and that's for a variety of reasons. But we engage with people. I engage with people regularly, but I don't want to be the only point of contact between those members and everybody else, you know. So I want people to feel engaged in the work that we're doing. And then also that allows us to broaden our scope and for people to feel connected to our mission, feel connected to our objectives. So, you know, we've in the past couple of years, we've done things where we've had like ad hoc committees. I'm looking at Rosella and I'm thinking about the library, the poster contest that we did at the library a few years ago, where we had members that were engaged and working on that project. And they really took it upon themselves. They had the initiative, they had the connections, they made the connections if they didn't have them. And they took it and ran with it, and it was great. And you know, those are things that we want to do. We want to be able to do those things. So, you know, we wanted to have a brief discussion today, and then for our next meeting in May, we really want to be able to, we want to use the coalition meeting as a time to, for the work groups to give updates on what they're working on. So this, you know, the ask is that you choose a work group to be a part of, but then we're also asking that you are meeting once a month with your other work group members and you're working on whatever it is that you're working on. Obviously, I would be attending all of those work group meetings and help facilitate those meetings and making sure that, you know, there are objectives that are aligned with our action plan. But the goal is that we're spreading out a little bit and really taking on a little bit more of the ownership of the coalition. Yeah, Rosella.
So will you put those work groups in the weekly constant contact that you send out to everybody, recruiting people to be part of that? And have you done any outreach too? I mean, we have, we certainly have the schools actively involved as a sector. Have you done any outreach to the libraries? Because libraries do have special, you know, teen centers. And one of the things that the Chatham Borough Library, the library that Chatham was talking about, was funding for somebody who would be both a teen center specialist and a media specialist. So I think identifying that person and inviting them to at least, you know, be part of the coalition, I think might extend our outreach a little bit.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I think like that's exactly what we're wanting the recruitment work group to really take hold of. So really identifying those groups in the community that we don't have engaged, or we do have engaged, but maybe they're not as engaged as we'd like them to be, or we've identified a project or an initiative that they would be a good partner for. That's a great first goal for the recruitment work group, is to make that point of contact, share information about the coalition, and invite them to come. And or alternatively, go to the, you know, go to a library meeting and learn about their programs that they're offering, and sort of learn about ways that they think that we could fit into to what they're doing. These are, you know, these work groups, I feel like it's like a big term and it can be daunting almost, but I am here to provide any and all resources that be, that everyone would need. So, you know, just as an example, going off of the, let's say with recruitment, you've identified, if you, let's say Rosella, you're part of the recruitment work group, you've identified the library of the Chathams as a good group to engage. Well, I would provide you with our materials, talking points, whatever, to ensure that you feel comfortable and confident in going and trying to engage that, you know, the library and those people, you know, and getting them involved in the coalition. You know, the ultimate goal is that by serving in this on this work group, you feel confident in the mission of the coalition. You feel knowledgeable about, you know, what we're trying to accomplish and why, you know, each of the 12 sectors is integral to the work that we're doing. So that's kind of, that just naturally came up as an example. So I think that that's a really good one. But the goal for today was to sort of, you know, when we're virtual, it's difficult, right? We were going to be virtual and in person, so that was gonna even be more challenging in terms of breaking into work groups. But just briefly, from what I've mentioned, do you feel like you have a natural inclination to join one of the three work groups? So also just to give an overview, when we talked about sustainability, we talked about this at our last meeting. As we hopefully will be funded for 5 additional years, we want to start thinking about fee for service. We want to start thinking about fundraising efforts. It might be just something as simple as adding a donate now button on our website. But along with actual money, we also need to think about our match requirement and really trying to diversify our network of the way that we're receiving these matching funds. So, we have our $125,000 a year match requirement. And even as Terry was speaking, I was thinking things as simple as Terry provides 300 brochures of 200. Whatever the number is, brochures for recovery services that CARES provides. We count that, we count Terry's time. If we're sending kids or we're sending adults or family members to a peer recovery service or something like that, we can count, the time of the specialists at CARES and things like that. So with sustainability, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for federal, getting more actual money so that we can sustain our program, but also how are we gonna meet our match requirement? Because as we progress as a DFC coalition, that match requirement increases each year. And we wanna make sure that we have no problem hitting that match each year. Maybe a goal for the sustainability work group is working with law enforcement and trying to figure out, okay, what is law enforcement doing that directly speaks to our mission? And what are the ways that we can count what they're doing towards our match requirement? It's things like that, like really having to think creatively. And again, that's something that I 100% help with and, sitting in on all these work group meetings as well. And then lastly, the projects and initiatives group, which is like the event, it's like the event planning committee. We have our Draw the Line campaign, which we want to launch in the next month and a half. So that's really, looking at what we want the objectives of that campaign to be, who we need to engage so that the campaign is reaching as many facets of the community as possible. We have Fishwack coming up. We have Bottle Hill Day coming up. We have farmers markets. So that's really, how are we getting our volunteers for that? What outreach are we doing to ensure that we can properly staff those tables so that our resources are getting out to as many people in the community as possible? So that's the event / initiative work. So just based on those descriptions, do people feel held to be a part of one group or another? Result.
I think it makes sense. And I think whether you do it in person or virtually, if you want to do it virtually, Zoom has rooms that you can go into for just a period of time. And they're not that difficult to navigate, to move people into a breakout room for and then bring them back to the main discussion. And one of the neat things about the Library of the Chathams is that they have a particular kind of camera called an owl camera, which is set on a table and it telescopes everybody in the room, and it has both an auditory and a visual interactive phase. So I mean, I think it's really going forward. I know people are really, really anxious to get together in person. I happen to prefer Zoom. It fits into my lifestyle so much more easily than getting in a car and going someplace.
Yeah, and I think also to your point with the work group meetings, not the coalition meeting, it's easy enough if we're having just the recruitment work group get together. If, we would be in a location, let's say we're here at the Y, we're in the teen center or something like that, two people come in person, it's easy enough for me to have my tablet and just have a Zoom meeting open and for that other person or a couple of other people that prefer to be remote to just remote in. It's the big coalition meeting that's a little bit, more difficult to navigate, but that's why we really want these meetings to happen supplemental to the coalition meeting. And the coalition meeting, the monthly meeting, becomes the time where we can share updates. So with that being said, and being mindful of our 2 minutes that we have left, what I'm going to do is send out an email Friday, because we have two scheduled blasts going out for Pat's presentation and for the newsletter. So on Friday, look for an email from the coalition with a doodle sign up. There's going to be information in the body of the email that has sort of what the three work groups are, what the expectations are, what the you know, what the goals are. And then we're going to ask that you select which subcommittee or work group you want to be part of. And then I think from there we can assess you know, where the gaps are and where we have a surplus, and then just kind of go from there. And then I'll, you know, communicate and set up these meetings for the next month, and we'll just get together and start doing some things with these work groups. Great. That's all that I have.
Awesome. Did someone want to say something? Did I hear something? No? All right. Well, excellent. I think this was really an excellent meeting. Thank you all for being here. Thank you so much to Terry. I don't know if you all saw that she did leave her email in the chat. So if you want to reach out to her, get involved in any way, attend the fundraiser, you know, learn more about all of the programs that Terry's involved in, please reach out to her. And thank you all for being here. Look out for the email that Allison is talking about the work groups. We're hopefully, as she mentioned, looking to get some discussion going for, you know, progress on each of the work groups next meeting. So I hope you guys all have a great day, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, everyone. It's so nice to see you all.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye now.